You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
Okay, so, let's rock.
And roll.
And at the beat, you're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Frame of Mind. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Chris in South Carolina.
Chris in South Carolina. How's it going? How are you guys doing briefly with the coronavirus? I know that nationwide, I don't think any kid is actually going to school. So what are you doing during this time?
We're calling it e-learning. So yes. It's all online, all on the computer. Digital chasing down of children to try to get any learning done and happening. Because most of them have decided that their learning should take sole place on their Xbox. If I could just push out an RPG where I could teach through the RPG right now, that'd be fantastic. Hey, Microsoft, maybe get on that. Maybe make that happen. Right.
Do you remember a few years ago when Pokemon Go went out and they said, hey, well, there's one good thing about this. It's actually getting the kids out of the house and walking around trying to find their Pokemon.
And it does. I still do that. I still walk around with my Pokemans, and we capture them. My kids love to go on walks around our house. We walked 6 kilometers just last week catching Pokemon.
There we go. And James, how about you? What's it like over there near Big Ben?
My understanding is that they've made Pokemon like more frequent, and you know they've kind of turn down the difficulty level on the back of they don't want people walking as far. Mm-hmm. So things like, you know, the eggs and stuff like that, they've dialed them down. But to me, that just says that the more you risk, the more rewards you get. So, you know, you can still do your 10-kilometer, 20-kilometer walks. It's just instead of getting one egg, you now get four. So maybe the message isn't maybe we should not be doing the Pokemon Go at this stage. Anyway, in the UK, everything good.
Oh, nice. Everything's good, huh? Well, we're shut down here. It's a good thing, you know, you guys are able to do the at-home work, at-home version of the game. My wife is doing the same thing, where she can act... What does that mean? Oh. He's there, but...
So who are you referring to?
Oh, there we go. Chris?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Did you hear everything I said?
Yes.
Okay. I kept hearing do-do-do-do-do, and I think that's when somebody was calling or you're calling someone else, so I don't know what that was about. But anyway.
I'm muted, so it wasn't me.
Oh, okay. So my wife is also...
But also, hang on. Also, by process elimination, it wasn't me either.
So just... Oh, good. I guess it was me. Chris, point to who it was. Oh, yep, it was me. Okay, so she works at home too. Now, here's the problem. Two things I see. One is because I drive Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Grubhub, and Postmates, riders are obviously fearful of going anywhere. And quite honestly, I'm now fearful of putting people in my car. I noticed something crazy is happening over the last 2 weeks that I've kept driving, is that everybody wants to sit in the front seat with me now. Everyone! It's like, I keep that door locked now. I know it's not as much distance as I should, But I'm like, ah, back. And I tell them why. Because, you know, with all this mess going, it's a prudent idea to keep people at distance. Oh, I understand completely. But I've never went through where everyone wants to ride the front seat. So, obviously, there are a lot of stupid people. I keep my mask next to me. Because, of course, you're dealing with the public. And someone's going to go, oh, shit. You know, at that point, now you're like, oh, God, what do I do? So, put the mask on. Although, you know, it's not going to do any good. Because they're gone from the car. It's still, their shit's still swimming around my car, right? So when they get out,
did you get to charge them for that?
No, you know, I'm at the midst of whatever. But so when they get out of the car, I roll the windows down and I hit the gas and try to, you know, flood as much out as I can. I do the same thing with people who smell like marijuana too. That's another thing I've been noticing is an increase in marijuana. Like, oh Jesus, stinks. Okay, what's the other thing? So I can't do work from home. I have no choice. I have to go out. And so what I've been doing lately is not driving people, just doing deliveries. So I'm trying. However, work is down considerably. Okay, so I feel better. Okay, so where we would normally insert our Picard review, we're not going to do that tonight because an unnamed guest has not watched them. I won't name him because, you know, I don't want to embarrass him. But, you know, it's not James and it's not me. So,
it's just... to be fair, they hide it under a CBS paywall that, well, not for James. That I did not feel the need to climb over until now. Actually, yesterday when I realized, oh, it's only $6. And even though all Amazon Prime members around the world, except for in the United States of America, get to watch it on their Prime subscription. And I have a Prime subscription that I pay a lot for. That's fine. They want me to pay $6 more for the advertisement full version.
Yeah.
Whatever. So
that's a workaround. It costs you money anyway for the workaround. My daughter loves a series called Pretty Little Liars. And again, you can't find it here in the United States. It's only available on CBS in England. But it's not available. Oh, Netflix. I'm sorry, Netflix. It's not available on Netflix here. Only over there. So I got into a program called NordVPN. Where when I want to download those episodes, I turn on my VPN and it puts me in London, right next to James, I think. You know, the pink house that's a couple down the street from you, James? That's the one that I get their VPN now.
I see, yeah.
Okay.
Is that, by the way, is this legal?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you can, okay, I should probably quantify that. It's not legal that I'm getting it off of Netflix because I'm in England, but yeah, it's a VPN. You know, it's in you're in a coffee house. You go to the VPN because then your traffic is secure. That's the reason I use it. But hey, I'm trying to get around a wall here. It's the only way I can do it. Okay, so. Let's go on to Frame of Mind. Oh, sorry. So what I meant, guys, is next week you're going to hear our review of 8, 9, and 10. Just a, you know, brief synopsis that usually lasts about 40 minutes. About the same time it's taken me to explain that. So, Frame of Mind. It is the 21st episode of Season 6. Aired first on May 3rd, 1993. Written by Brannon Braga and directed by James L. Conway.
The episode now, that could also be called What If Riker Woke Up in a Sanitarium?
Yeah. Okay. So, guest stars for today are David Selberg as Cyrus, Andrew Prine, P-R-I-N-E, Prine, as Suna, Gary Wernst as Mavek, Susanna Thompson as Jaya, Alan Dean Moore as a wounded unnamed crew member, not important enough, I guess. And I don't see Majel Barrett as a voice of the computer today, so nope, she's not here. She's not here. I don't remember it either. So what do we think about this episode? And for me, it's a pretty darn psychedelic. I like it a lot. This one screws with your head to the point where you have almost no idea who's real, what's real. What are you watching? Is it on the ship? Is it in real, or is it in this sanitarium that he's put? They're putting him through something. Is it in his head? Like I said, we're not sure. Is all this just some kind of holodeck program running, or is this hell actually real? So, I've always liked this one. Chris, should let you first go first. I'm sorry, but why don't you tell us what you're thinking so far?
That's okay. I think that this is a fun episode. I think it's one of those that if you tug too hard at the plot strings, it will leave you feeling a little less than fulfilled. But most of us don't do that, and we shouldn't do that. And so it is a pretty good episode of Star Trek on the whole. So I enjoy it.
Good. Doc?
Okay. Now, I get confused by this one. I've watched this twice, and what? I don't get what's going on. And I think that I would have really preferred them to have kind of weaved the various levels of delusion, whether it's on the Enterprise or in the room or at the play or whatever, in a more clever way. Because unless I'm mistaken, they just basically end this by saying, oh, it was all a drug-induced coma, right? I mean, nothing we see other than the last, like, seconds of the show are in reality, are they? And I think if the answer to that is, yeah, that they're not, that is slightly disappointing. I got really confused.
Well, I think there must be parts where people are sneaking in and actually talking to him. So I think that there are parts of it that are happening in some way. But again, we're tugging real hard on a thing that is not the point of the episode, in my opinion.
So what's the point of the episode?
Well, I mean, it's first and foremost, it is started on a very hazy premise of what if Riker woke up in a sanitarium, because like Brandon Braga is loath to do, simplicity is his friend. He's overly simple, and I think a lot of his episodes leave a lot of us who really try to think these things through and consider a lot of it feel cool the first time I watched it, but now that the tethers are off and I'm looking deeper into what actually happened, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? That is just key. I think it makes sense if you give it the premise.
I think I've got it.
Okay.
I think I got the whole thing in a nutshell. This here, everything that we're seeing from start to finish is in his drug-induced haze. I think he went down on this mission already before we ever saw what happened, and he got captured, put onto this bed filled with drugs, and they tried to probe his mind. I think this entire episode is strictly from his drug-induced haze, and that's why we keep going back and forth. They're making him, in his mind, go back and forth.
No, so I agree with that, but my criticism is that just a construct for them to get out of clever writing?
Mm-mm. Yes.
So they could have, you know, had it been, you know, had like the third level and the fifth level been real, but the fourth and the second and the first were not, or they were like, you know, delusions, or even, you know, even traps that were set up for Riker to fall into. I think that would have been a lot more fun than just to let it go completely crazy for 48 minutes and then in the final few seconds say, oh, by the way, he actually was being drugged. Because then you could you can end it with him then waking up from a dream and go, no, actually, it was a dream about him being drugged. And then you can wake it up from a holodeck saying, oh, actually, no, it was a holodeck experience of him dreaming about him being drugged. So to me, it slightly cheapens the episode by not having like a... Because all of the action in the episode happens in a dream-like situation, I just feel that it's... You know, I feel that it's slightly lacking. And the reason why is that I think other episodes like this, you generally get a feel and you can see where that comes in. And you can, when you rewatch them, you can see various clues that have been, that have kind of, you know, the real world has managed to step in. I'm thinking about things like Distant Voices on DS9 and stuff like that, where although it's like a crazy situation and you know it's obviously not reality because, you know, we know that Riker isn't actually a crazy guy in that's being tried. I just feel that the way that they write those other episodes is slightly more fulfilling for me because you can see the narrative, you can see what they're trying to say. Whereas here, I just feel that it's just crazy for the sake of crazy, and they get out of it by saying, "Well, drug-induced coma."
Well, can we talk about the construction of this episode for a second before we get into the actual breakdown of so this episode was pitched by Braga late in the season apparently, and they didn't have an episode for this, and this was like a last minute we're gonna do it, and they all went into a room for a few hours and came up with this script, and if it hadn't have worked they would have been short an episode, and so this was like a backs to the wall, we got to get something out. And so for that, Doc, I think that it ends up being a lot more than it could have been, right? So if it was just Braga's initial idea of Riker wakes up in a sanitarium and doesn't know how he got there, right? If they didn't layer some of these other things in, then it would be a lot less complex. And I think that there is some complexity that's there, even though he does wake up and it's all just a dream, right?
Yeah, maybe the criticism isn't that. I mean, of course, this is clearly much better than, you know, Shades of Grey Part 2 or something
right,
like that.
Right.
But I almost feel that the you're teased a very, very clever and intricate, multi-threaded plot, and then it doesn't deliver that. And it's not to say that the experience of watching it, in particular, the experience of watching it the first time, when you still have this anticipation that it's all going to be cleared up or it's a lot cleverer than you think, and you're looking, wow, what's happening here? And now he's going crazy. And now, hang on, I'm trying to follow it. I thought this part was real, but now it's not. And the back and forth is very, very entertaining the first time because you still have the same experience watching it the first time. I just fear that we were dancing very, very close to something a lot more special, potentially.
Well, I think there's something special in there, and we'll get deeper into that when we get into the actual episode. But that would have happened in a third or fourth revision of this script, right? So, like, if they had had the right amount of time, they were developing this into a really good story. It just needed a couple more passes on the ending, maybe some added bits in the middle, right? So the construct is all there for a really, really fantastic episode, like you're saying. The rush nature of the script to get it in and get it done quickly. So they had the episode. I think that they weren't able to layer it the way that you're kind of talking about. So I don't think you're wrong is what I'm saying. I just think that they did do something really fantastic with what they had in the moment.
Well, I think they were right not to give it away at the beginning because quite honestly, my first viewing and maybe if you don't see it for a while, you don't quite remember every bit of the plot. But from my point of view, it seems like I was guessing, is this one real? Is this one real? I was thinking that every time he was on the ship talking to them about what his experience was, that was real life. And then when he's back down, how did he get there? Did they take him from his quarters? What did they do? And until they started to blend the two together, where they was on the ship in the theater, some people call that 10 forward, but I don't think so, because I think it looked like just a theater.
It's not 10 forward.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. But
they go here for other things, too. There's a painting exhibit. There's like a music thing.
Yeah.
So this is a stage that they use. I would say this is a different deck altogether, or somewhere different. I don't have all the schematics and plans. I'm sure somebody has a book that tells you all that.
So I felt like when they were on, when they were in the theater, and then the Sauron, not Sauron, I have the thing right here. Cyrus, you know, shows up on the, or it blended. I think it blended pretty good until the end when we get the reveal. Oh, this was all a dream. I don't think it's such a bad thing because of that. So anyway, okay. I hit my squeaky chair. Sorry about that. We begin with what looks like Riker in a mental hospital talking about a person that he has killed. But you hear Data's voice in the background, being the doctor. Riker ends up flubbing his lines. So obviously it's a play that we're doing here. And, okay, well, let's call it a night, Dr. Crusher says. And as he's walking to his quarters, he's doing the dialogue. And when I have one shred of independent thought, when I have one shred of... I mean, he's going through his lines, and he was really getting into it. Then he bumps into this crew member he's never seen before. And we cut to the commercial. So what do you guys think of the teaser?
So this is where I think that this episode succeeds. It chooses the right character in the sixth season to do this with. I think we can all agree that Riker has been one note. He's kind of been relegated to the amplified on steroids Kirk position of being the big burly man's man and, you know, slays the women on every planet and leaves a, you know, galaxy of his conquests or whatever, right? And I think that that is not a good thing, right? And so people look back at Riker and they say, oh, he's, you know, this vapid one-dimensional character. But here in this episode, we have a different Riker. And this is a character that, despite some of the poor writing and some of the silly stuff that they've done with him, when they had him, you know, constantly hitting on every woman that comes on the onto the ship and like doing all these different things, he's still a pretty beloved character just from the charm of the actor. I think he's a very charming guy, and we like him, right? And so they take this beloved, kind of carefree character who's been one note, and they give him some substance and some stuff to work with, and he actually does some interesting stuff with it, I think.
Good point. Okay, so when you say that Riker has, you know, schnogged every woman that they've come across in the galaxy, here's a tangent for you. Maybe we should be looking forward to Picard Season 2, all those half-Rikers come back after him. Because he was never in their lives. Anyway. Okay, so Riker's...
Sorry. I just caught that.
Riker's half-Rikers. Many so. Yeah.
Bunch of little half Rikers got together, and now they're going to come after him 18 years later. Hey, that's a good season 2 one.
I'm sure Riker uses protection.
Yeah, probably. But you never know. Okay, how about one half Riker comes after him? Which we don't have to worry about because Riker has nothing to do with it.
He's actually a clone.
I was about to mention, isn't that the plot of Nemesis?
Yeah, no.
But when all the half Rikers come after him, they realize that it's not actually him, it's Thomas Riker that did the deed before he went off.
There we go.
Your dad is my clone. Your dad is my clone.
Can't be. Thomas Riker's in a Cardassian prison. Still, to this day, he's in a Cardassian prison. Anyway. So Riker's mission is to infiltrate Talonis IV to rescue a Federation team. But first, Worf has to teach Riker how to use a blade for the mission and cuts him in the face. Well, time to go to sickbay. Did you guys notice he sliced his face, but there's no blood coming out?
There was blood? What do you mean there's no blood?
There was blood over the wound. Nothing going down his face.
Well, it's like if you just chip yourself while shaving.
Yep. I mean, I think it was a little deeper than that. But
did you bleed that much?
No, not when you chip yourself shaving, but when someone slices you with the blade, yeah, you're going to bleed. Especially in the face.
I appreciate that.
I mean, come on, you're going to bleed. He should be dripping blood all the way to 10 forward, but no, it clotted within seconds, you know, like that. I am sorry, Commander. Yeah, don't worry about it. I've had a lot on my mind lately.
Yeah, Worf was a bit short with him, right? He didn't exactly, he wasn't exactly respectful.
Are you listening to me? Yeah, I hear you. Shut up. Anyway, here's a question, though. We just talked about whether this whole thing was a drug-induced stuff. What about... Okay, remind me, because I watched this last week. Was Riker in every scene? Because... Doesn't it seem weird that he would be reliving scenes that he wasn't in, if that was the case? You know, like
I think he's in every scene.
Okay, good. Because, you know, like Shades of Grey, when they had discussions on the bridge and Wrecker's still on the planet, that makes no sense, but... Okay. Alright, so Riker is leaving LaForge... as Riker is leaving, the Forge brings in a burn victim from engineering. It seems like something blew up there. Who knows why? Who cares? Although a 50-cent fuse would have stopped the overload, but they just don't think of that. Riker's looking at this guy, and he's staring back, and it freaks the hell out of Riker enough that he needs counseling. What do you guys think of that scene? Because that was pretty intense. He's staring at him. Anything, guys?
No, it's fun. It's, I mean, it's spooky, I think.
Yeah.
It is spooky.
Yeah, it's a used rotate character who's kind of carefree and would probably be jumping in trying to be the hero in this scene, and he's completely not that, right? It's the opposite, the antithesis of what he would normally be or do, which is, it catches us off guard, which is part of the mystery of this episode, I think.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay, but so now he's starting to feel like his life is becoming just like Frame of Mind. I think he bumped into that crewman a couple times. So here we go, the night of the play. Riker's just tearing it apart, man. He was doing damn good. And they're done. They all come out to take a bow. He takes a bow. And all of a sudden, the audience is gone. They're just gone. And he finds himself in what looks like a locked-in room with an alien who says they have a lot of work to do. Okay. We're good with that? Okay. Whew. You guys are tough. So he doesn't remember his name. All he knows is, I'm Commander. Commander. But it's like a dream. No.
So, again, I think this speaks to the mystery. Like, it's kind of bouncing us around, jilting us. We're unprepared for it. It's mysterious, and it drags us along this way. It's good storytelling in that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the first transition is interesting because we know that Riker is going to be going down to the planet. We also know that Riker has been doing this. He's been doing this play, and then all of a sudden, you know, what we think is happening is not happening. But we still, you know, I still think that there's enough crumbs for us to think, okay, well, maybe he's been captured. Maybe he's remembering things from the past. It seems like a, you know, I can kind of fill in the holes as to how he would have got there and how he could have, you know, come to this situation. So at this point, it seems to be like a relatively standard guy on the planet has been probably drugged or probably is recalling his memories from a little while ago, but he is being held captive there, and you know we expect our heroes to come and rescue him anytime soon.
Okay, cool. So the doctor tells him he wants to know what happened to his head. He cut his head on a door during an escape attempt, and you know, they're not going to let him try that again. So the doctor walks out. And then a few minutes later, what do we get? They decide to let him have a couple hours in the commons area. So if he just tried to escape and he hurt somebody, why are they going to let him roam free there?
That's a good question.
But they're serving spiny lobe fish or spiny lobe fish today. Sounds yummy.
Lobe fish sounds cartilaginous.
Mm-hmm. So he gets to the commons area where he sees a lot of people who appear to be mentally disturbed. One of them comes to him, to his table, and says she is Commander Bloom from the Yorktown. It's interesting that she looks like the aliens, but it's possible. So she's going to communicate with her ship, and she pulls out her communicator. Or we call it a spoon that she had hidden up her sleeve and tries to call the Yorktown.
I like this bit. I think this is good.
Yeah, because, I love this whole scene.
Yeah, because you know you kind of know that Riker is Riker, and then you see this other person. You think, oh, you know, they lead you into the trap here, right? You think, oh, actually, yes, these guys are there from the Yorktown, but no, the woman's crackers. And Riker's so disappointed when he realizes.
Do you think he was falling for it, or did he? You think maybe he thought she was a little psycho?
No.
I think that he was not falling for her.
What's that, Chris? You cut out.
I think that he is not falling for her. I think that this episode has done everything that it can. At first, I think he absolutely is until she busts out the spoon, and then you see his whole countenance drop. I think it's a good bit of acting, actually.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. Right.
And by the way, that's the Borg Queen, right?
Wait a minute, what?
She's the Borg Queen.
Oh, yes, she's Susanna Thompson.
She's the second Borg Queen.
Mm-hmm. Cuter. Okay, so they take her away, and he finds a little bit more that he killed a man and was found standing next to the body with the knife in his hand. And I believe the man used the words devil in the fold, if I'm not mistaken. You guys know that reference?
I do not.
I don't either.
Where Scotty is accused of murdering several people. Every time somebody ends up murdered, he's standing right next to him, holding the dead victim in his arms, sometimes holding the knife in his hand. Do you remember that episode on
the original series? Isn't that from the third season? Mm. So that's Wolf in the Fold, right?
Wolf in the Fold, yeah. Oh, did I say devil? Yeah, I think I said devil. But yeah, it is Wolf in the Fold. You're right. Okay. So all of a sudden, the jailer, as he's starting to go crazy, sticks him with the needle on his shoulder, and then he wakes up in his own bed on the ship. And this is where they're using misdirection to get me, and they got me, because this is where I said, this is real. This is the real part. He just dreamed it. No biggie. Right? Okay.
I think that's where we're expected to believe, right? That's what we're expected to believe. That's the path that we're supposed to follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's either been abducted or somehow they managed to grab him into their reality or you know, whatever. There are many times where we've seen people shift into alternative futures or alternative dimensions or be dragged in, kicking and screaming like they did in Schisms. So that's where I am at the moment.
Yeah, I'm following right along too. It's been a while since I saw this episode, but I mean, it stays in the back of your head, I think. It is good in that way as well, and we'll talk more about like why. But I'm following right along with it, and I think that it's continuing that what is really going on here kind of thing in your mind, because you know that something's not right at this point, right? So you start to realize that something has just gone incredibly awry, and either it was in his dream or it was or something else is happening. So at this point, I'm intrigued, and I've got two paths in my mind. Maybe he's getting so deep into this character that he's kind of going nutty, or, you know, like you have a couple of different options that you could kind of play with in your head as you're following along, which I think is good, and it's good writing and keeps you following that mystery down that path.
Actually, let me agree with that. I do think that the mental state of Riker does get called into question in this episode, and it's something that is probably unique to this one compared to other episodes where they have, you know, alternative realities or people, you know, in different situations. Like, you know, when Worf in Parallels is shifting, I mean, at no point do they think he's gone crazy. Whereas it's very clear that that remains an option, at least for you know, to explain Riker's behavior or Riker's perspective.
Mm. Okay. So Crusher visits him in his quarters. House call. Wouldn't that be nice to have house calls again? And he tells her about the whole thing, you know, from being from the play to being in the hospital. And is this, I think this is where she's starting to feel a little something for him, going, man, I didn't know this play was affecting you like this. So it makes it seem like it's all in his head. But they continue the play. He does his line. He looks at the door to see the alien standing there. But then he turns his head and he comes back to aliens gone. So they continue. But then he starts to hear things around him, like the hospital sounds, paging or whatever. He looks into the crowd and sees an alien sitting between Picard and Worf. So then he runs and grabs him. Who are you? Did I do that good? Yeah. He's Lieutenant Suna, sir. Okay, it's time for you to go to the hospital. So, or to sickbay, that is. So Crusher takes him to sickbay. And shuts the play down. Time to get some rest. How are we doing so far now? All right.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So, by the way, do we, in terms of this new lieutenant guy, he's obviously an alien, and we're obviously expected to think that there's something up with him, right? Mm-hmm. Because we see him at the beginning, then we see his race, and then we see him standing there. And, I mean, is the episode just pandering to prejudice here, that we're expected to think that this guy is a bad guy just because he looks different?
I don't think you're supposed to think he's a bad guy at this point. I think you're supposed to think Riker maybe has some prejudicial tendencies, but you as the, I don't think that it's indicative of you at this point, right? So, like, he grabs this guy, and you're like, oh, this is just some random dude on the bridge or in the crowd. And so they're, I think that they're counting on the viewers of this not to assume that he's a bad guy, because they're Star Trek viewers and not Star Wars viewers. You know, it's not the, the ugly alien syndrome or anything here.
Okay, actually, so what I'm going to slightly modify that.
Yeah.
I think on the teaser, you're expected to think, ooh, that guy looks a bit off. However, I do think that once you get to know them a little bit more and you get introduced to them, when Riker does go for this guy, I think most of the reaction of the audience is, look, Riker, something's gone very wrong here. What are you doing? And I do think at this point, I'm more on the side of that, you know, Riker might be going a little bit crazy, or he might be projecting, or he might be doing something, and that poor guy being shouted at is clearly not, you know, he clearly doesn't deserve it in any way. But I think at the beginning of the episode, you're almost inclined to believe that there must be something suspicious about this guy. You even had music, and you had
the music and the way the guy plays it too. He kind of does a half look at him as he walks around the corner. Like, yeah. it is sort of suspicious, but I think that they play it just subtle enough at that point, like in the beginning, where you can say, okay, he's, you know, he's not quite bad. Like maybe right, maybe something's going on with Riker when you get to this point, and even some of the reveals in between.
Okay, sorry.
My wife had to come down, so I had to mute, and I forgot I muted. So he, it's time to get some rest, the doctor says, and Troy escorts him back to his quarters. But during the walk, he starts hearing this voice again that perhaps he needs another treatment. Now, do you think Troy should have walked him all the way to his room? But then again, since it ain't real, it doesn't matter. But he gets on a turbo lift and he steps out. He sees the woman who thinks she's from the Yorktown and runs to his room, only to find out he's back in the hospital. Poor guy. He's absolutely going bonkers. So he talks
to his... bonkers a US word? Do you guys use bonkers?
Yeah,
we use fine. Do you? Are you? Okay.
Yeah. It came into popular culture with Eminem when I was a teenager, right? He had a whole song. I think my dad's gone crazy, and he used bonkers in there quite a few times.
you know, rappers, they use every word they can use that'll rhyme with another word, right?
Okay, because for a second I thought this, I was being, Lou was doing one of the, English
scissors. I try.
In order
once
to
in
make
a while.
Me feel welcome.
Yeah, once in a while I try. Just, you know, just because I love you so much. So, he talks to his dad. Every time I got Chris in my peripheral vision right next to the script, or, you know, the review here, and I can see Chris kind of moving about, and it kind of gets my attention once in a while. I better move you, Chris. Let's see. I'm going to put you over here. I know it's not as roomy as over there, but you're going to have to deal with it. So he talks to the doctor about how to bring his real memories to the front. They want to do reflection therapy. So bringing out the front bringing out the memories holographically. What do you guys think of the holographic memory? Each one was doing their lines as if it was him, people from the ship, until all of a sudden they break off and go, "Commander, don't believe him."
I think it's a cool idea. I think this is where that next passage of the script would have refined some of this, because I think this is where James is going to start having some troubles with the way this is working. And I'm speaking for James, and he can speak for himself. But my assumption is this is probably the weakest of the scenes as far as what's going on and where it's going to go from here.
Well, I should probably mention that I have no original thoughts of my own. So the thing that I take away from this is that, to me, it's very clear now that that he's not in, you know, he's not in a kind of like a side Dracula care unit. So at this point, as soon as they start saying things like, "Oh, we have to be done very, very quickly, and we can try this one last treatment and stuff," these are just red flags that clearly means he's not in a, you know, he's not in a healthcare system. So, you know, I didn't know exactly where they were going to go. I kind of understand them bringing to the fore, you know, facets of his character, and that's, you know, it is what it is. I didn't remember that his facets, his visions, ended up, you know, basically telling them, "No, you're not crazy after all. Keep believing." But I actually don't have too much of a problem with this scene. I'm more confused by the one where Beverly turns up. That one's more confusing to me, because Beverly turns up, I think, a little bit after this, and then Worf and Data come up after this, and I would have much preferred that those two interactions to be actually weaved into the true storyline than what ends up happening.
Here's the question, and I didn't think about it until you raised your issues with the episode at the beginning. Is Beverly always the one who tells him, "Wait, this isn't what happens," or is it like a mixture of the different characters? I can't fully remember.
You mean as a character show up? Okay, no, I got it right here. As he's undergoing the procedure, a holographic Deanna comes out to say, "I was terrified." Worf then appears and says, and the two of them talk about how he felt just before he arrived at the hospital. Then Picard comes out and tells him, gives him more detail of what he went through, I guess, during the killing of this man. And then all of a sudden, that's when Mr. Sona appears. And the doctor seems baffled about why he would be here. You know, who is this man? I saw him on the ship. Who is he? Well, that's Dr. Sona, the hospital administrator. Well, why is he here? I don't know. I mean, you know, the doctor made it appear like he's just as baffled as why this guy would show up as well. Is that what you're talking about?
No, my thought was, if it's always Beverly who's breaking into his reveries and saying this is crazy, then that's good storytelling, and I would argue the doctor out of everything. But if it's a smattering of all the different characters telling him these things, then I think that it's harder to make a good argument for this being good storytelling. Because if it's one person who's maybe breaking through the mental block, like you can connect those dots, right? But if Picard tells him in this scene, keep your sanity, you're not crazy, you really are, you know, from this, like, is Picard really breaking in there, or is like his subconscious Picard just like rallying again? Like, it just, there's a lot of question there that leaves some things muddy, thematically, I think. Or not thematically, storytelling-wise, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then it's Deanna that steps forward to say, none of this is real.
Sorry, cool. Dr. Trey had to bust in.
Eh, you know, he does once in a while. None of this is real, that they're all delusions. So Worf and Deanna try to convince him to allow them to help him. But he screams, no! And they disappear. Doctor calls out a big step. So that made me, again, it made me believe he was actually in this hospital and was able to push those delusions away. Doc, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the path we're led down, but then what does that exactly mean? That means that the entirety of the Star Trek Next Generation is just been played out in Riker's head. Because we obviously know that can't be true. I suppose more locally it might be that there's a that there's like a recent memory. Well, it can still be Riker taken away from the Enterprise, and he's using these projections as a way of keeping himself sane. And I'm pretty sure they've done that on another episode. I can't quite think which one it is, but I'm sure that one of the episodes either that they did here in TNG or DS9 or Voyager had that kind of behavior behind the scenes, but I can't remember off the top of my head at the moment.
All right. Okay, so he's back in the commons area where he's eating his Taco Bell meat when Dr. Crusher walks in and tries to convince him that the ship is trying to get him out. They're not exactly telling us where you are, or we had to find you on our own. They're saying you're not even a patient, but we're going to get you out. Don't worry. And I like the fact that Riker is just ignoring her, like, no, you're not here. You're not real. And he just continues eating his Taco Bell.
He seemed quite strong at being able to just dismiss her. Uh-huh. Because I would have thought he would have been in a mental state where he would have still been clutching on to a, to rescue.
Yeah. Okay. So it's nappy time, but Data and Worf break into the room and try to rescue Riker, and he screams again. No. He screams for help, and Data and Worf are almost captured, but Data beats everybody up. And they beam back to the ship. See? Told you it was all real. They had him.
Why wouldn't they have just beamed him out if they could have beamed out themselves?
That's such a good question, but they had to fight for him, I guess, to prove to him that they're real and this isn't. I guess, maybe. But for some reason, his cut comes back. So the doctor heals it again. Or is it? Nope. It's still bleeding. So he begins to realize that this isn't real. Clobbers Worf, takes his phaser, and decides to end this all no matter what it takes. He turns a phaser on himself and fires. But...
Okay, what was he expecting there? When he decided to shoot himself, what was he expecting?
Suicide. He's thinking this is real. They were screwing with him, so he's just going to kill himself. One way or another, he's going to end this.
And this is where... So there, we talked about a second ago, like one of the weaknesses of the script and something that would have probably been polished. This is one of the most powerful scenes, though, I feel like. Like when he pulls that trigger, like you are, if you're following along and you're invested and you've been following this mystery, you're seeing a character who was this heroic kind of badass. Like he's going to do whatever he has to do. And now he has fallen so far that he's willing to take his own life to get out of this insanity. And that's huge. And I think there's a lot of weight there. It's grotesque in a way for us to see this man so broken, who we have seen be so strong for so many people through so many episodes. So I think
does that really come through though? I mean, is that what you're feeling when he's doing this?
Absolutely.
Or is it more of a roll of the dice? Cause it almost feels like he knows something is up and he's just, he's attempting to step out in the same way that, I mean, who was it when they tried to blow up the warp core in the simulation? Who did that at one point? Did you guys remember what I'm talking about? there's a bit on the Next Generation where someone is feeling kind of, you know, if I don't know whether it's, they had to prove that they're in a simulation, so they go over to the warp core with a phaser and they try to blow up the ship.
I kind of remember that, but as far as specifics, I'm drawing a blank here.
Yeah, I don't remember it particularly, but I do think that there is some level of what I'm saying there evident, both in the script and in the way that he plays it. There is also the element that you're talking about of there's a small hope in him that this is all just fake and he's going to break the unreality of it through this. Mm-hmm. But there's also a very real chance, because he thinks this is a very real phaser, that it is going to end his life, and he still takes that chance. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that is a pretty far fall for this character particularly. And again, why I think that this character, it's important that it was this character for this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always read it a bit more that it's like, you know, he's in a bad dream and he's going to do something to get himself out of the dream. Like,
yes.
You know, yes. Rather than him actually thinking that it's the end of his life. But you know, and of course people get whatever they get out of the episode. It's not, certainly not for me to judge.
Oh, no, I think
the right interpretation.
You're both right. Chris said essentially, if this isn't real, turning a phaser on himself as a dream will probably snap him out of it. But if it is real, then he'd rather die than live with this situation. That's what I thought it meant, one way or another. Okay. So anyway, let's see. So he fires and he winds up back in the cell with three people saying that he needs synaptic brainwashing or something like that. I don't remember what it was. But then he fires a phaser on one of the hospital people and he disintegrates. That's when he puts it on level 16 and decides to blow the whole hospital up. But he finds himself back in the play, with the crowd cheering as he runs to the door and everything disappears. That's when we get the big reveal. Him and another ensign were taken and by aliens, and he shot one of them in the arm. No, wait, that was a different episode, wasn't it? Yeah. Remember how they kept disappearing? Him and I can't remember what her name, ensign someone or another, but
are you talking about schisms?
Yeah, there you go. Night. Yeah. See,
yeah, there this we is go. Like one of many episodes where Riker gets pulled into some weird fantasy world, or he's not in the real world, but we think it's the real world for a minute. Like, this is not Riker's first go at this sort of episode, I don't think.
No. So he fires at the hospital, and everything disappears. He wakes up on the table and realizes. And they realize, oh, wait, he's coming out. We got to get him back under. He sees the knife. He sees the communicator. He gets up, runs, grabs both, puts the knife out. I'm going to kill you. No, he's not. Hits the communicator, beam him up. And then that's it. We find out that all of this was just placed in his mind because they were trying to get information out. What information were they trying to get?
I'm not sure. Luke, did I miss the scene where he was sitting with Troy and drinking? Did you already go past that?
Yeah. Let me see. Yeah, because she walked him to his quarters at one point. Oh, he came to see her when he first woke up out of this.
Yeah. So we skipped right past that, and that was kind of one of the big cruxes of my argument for why this is a really good episode. Because she brings up a concept there that I think should color our entire viewing of this episode, this concept of owning your shadow, this transformative self-acceptance of who you are, even at your worst, right? Which is a Jungian psychological idea, right? And I think that when they were trying to frame this whole episode, that's kind of the thematic point that they want to hammer over and over, is what are these darker parts of Riker, which is why I would say, Doc, earlier that it was him making a decision between it could be him taking his own life, and he's willing to do that at this point, right? And I think some of the heaviness has to come out of this concept of owning your own shadow, looking into yourself and seeing the darkest thoughts that you have and the bleakest kind of attitudes that you have. And Troy talks about, you know, having an unprejudiced like objectivity towards it, and like, you know, you got to own it and you just got to be okay with it. Which I kind of disagree with. Like, I think you can change the darkest parts of yourself, and that some of us should be seeking to change those darkest parts. But then you also have to be careful, like, with social expectations and mores and, like, things like that, not thinking that things are shadows when they are light, or, you know what I'm saying. So, anyway, I think this concept of being friends and fellow sufferers and not judges, this idea of transformative self-acceptance kind of comes up throughout, because he's got to accept his position and where he's at, and he doesn't understand any of it, right? And so he's constantly fighting to get to what is the truth, what is the truth, what is the truth. And then when he finally blasts himself in the brain with that gun, that is the moment of self-acceptance. I am in a situation that is untenable, that is unlivable, and I'm either going to give of myself everything, like I'm just going to completely end myself, I'm going to terminate this whole thing, or I'm going to end whatever this nightmare is and find the truth. And then he finds the truth by shattering the unreality of it, and kind of living with the darkness of what these guys have done to him. Now, is it as powerful as it could be? I think Doc's right in saying that there's a good story hidden in here that they don't quite nail, right? They don't stick the landing. But if you can see what they were trying to do, and you were affected by it, I think, you know, Lou, you said at the beginning, this is one of those episodes that is good, right? And it sticks with you. You don't forget Frame of Mind. It's one of those episodes that almost everybody is going to throw out there as like, oh yeah, I kind of like it. Like, I remember that episode. That episode sticks with me. It's not one of these, you know, they shot the Warp Core episodes that we can't even remember the name of. You know, it's just another action, whatever. This one sticks in people's minds. And I think it is because of these deeper kind of thought processes that are kind of going on. Even though they may not have stuck the landing and really nailed the plot down so that it doesn't hold up the goodness of what they maybe were trying to do.
Okay. All right, so now we're back in reality. We're back on the ship. The last thing he has to do, just to make sure that this is absolutely real, is tear the set down. I like the way that ended with him tearing down walls. Guys, how are you on that? Doc, anyone?
Sorry, what was that? The thing about him dismantling the set?
Yes, because he just went through hell.
Yeah. Okay, I wasn't left with an impression that there was that much of an emotional burden that he was carrying from this particular set. So I understand that they try to play the play at the same time as the reality that Riker was going through. But I never felt that there was... it didn't come across to me that Riker would need to do this. So I kind of felt there was a slight add-on. It wasn't as powerful as I think it wasn't as powerful as it needed to be in order for me to care about it.
Man, I thought that set was it's the shadow of his torture. It is,
yes.
It is the image that, you know, on the wall of where they put him mentally so that they could extract whatever they wanted to extract from him. I thought the only way to end the episode is him tearing that up.
But at the end of the episode, when all is said and done, in particular with how the ending happens, I'm not here feeling, oh, poor Riker. I'm kind of feeling, you what happened there, and then moving on, because, you know, for all I know, because everything was inside of his mind, it was even unclear to me that did he ever do the play, did he ever rehearse for the play, did he actually perform it? I don't even know. And it's not as if you know, in DS9 they have the episode Hard Time where O'Brien basically has a prison sentence in his mind, and he comes out of it afterwards. And you can clearly see that there's a huge amount of psychological damage that's been done to O'Brien and how hard it is for him to like recapture his old self. With Riker, I just didn't buy that that there was that much there. So I feel like the way that they ended that piece of the storyline, it was deflating for me, and I kind of just lost interest.
I wonder if that's some of the gumminess of Next Gen's characters. You know, how they will have them one day go through this traumatic, terrible experience, and then the next episode they're exactly the same as they were two episodes ago. You know, mm-hmm. because this is still episodic. Whereas Deep Space Nine, he comes out of that thing, and it affects future episodes. It affects his disposition when he deals with certain... Like, mm-hmm. you can see that carry on in his character because of what Deep Space Nine was and kind of the strides they had taken in getting out of episodic television and into a more serialized deal. I wonder how much of it is that. Because I think that that set is the shadow of his torture, like I said before. And I think that it is emotionally resonant that he tears it down. Now, I can't tell anyone how to feel, right? And you came out of this episode feeling what you felt, which was, I don't really care about that. Like, it doesn't make total sense to me, and I did not follow along on that ride, right? And we're not all going to go along on every ride. But I feel like this episode really took me on the ride, and it resonated with me because of the choice of who they chose as the main character, this heroic, like, jump-into-action guy who was then dragged so low into his shadows that he was willing to make the ultimate sacrifice of himself to get out of this space. Now, could they have done more to make that kind of hammer home to a home run? Yes, I would not claim this is a 5-star episode, but it is definitely one of those episodes that resonates with me, right? And I remember it because of things like the end tearing down the scene, things like the conversation about, you know, the deepest shadows of your humanity and who you are. So honestly, I think that there is something resonant and powerful in this episode. I think that it could have been written slightly better. I think that part of that is because of how this episode was put together so quickly and without enough revisions for this heavy of subject matter.
Right. You know, one of you guys said something about, you know, he's completely torn down in this episode and then the next episode. He's perfectly fine. Yeah, that's the mantra of Star Trek. I think that it went all the way back to the time Lieutenant Uhura had her brain completely reformatted. But yet, and she was learning, you know, boo and dog and stuff like that. And then the next episode, she's completely at her station like nothing ever happened. So that's the mantra of Star Trek. I echo what Chris said, and yeah, you're right, Doc. You didn't get in the same car as we did, but tearing that set down puts a finality to this whole thing that he went through. Because like he said, I don't think I could sleep knowing that it's still there. And if this wasn't real, and he's surely still back in the hospital, it's going to come out while he's trying to tear the set down. And, you know, I think there was something very special about seeing him tear the set down, considering what that set put him through in his mind. Okay, so I hope I didn't skip over a lot, but I think that brings us to our end. Did I miss anything, guys?
Nope.
Okay. I'm good.
Good, good, good. Well, it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Chris, you're the guest. You should have went first earlier. Let's go first now.
This is a 10. It's a 10. No, I'm just kidding. So
you kid, but you should have heard a couple episodes when Doc gave Picard a 7 out of 5. But anyway.
Wow.
Okay. Yes.
What? I'll hear that at some point.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, you did. I believe what Sean says, you guys are ridiculous. He was right. 7.
We almost made a Canadian get upset. That's how outrageous we were.
That never happens. Anyway.
So, my final thoughts and ratings. So I'm going to go back to the Brandon Braga conversation for a minute. I don't have a lot of respect for him as a writer. I don't think that he's very good. He wrote over 100 episodes of Star Trek, which means that he must have some talent hidden deep down inside of him. But I find that when I see his name attached to an episode, I get a lot of high-minded concepts with vapid follow-through.
through. And you see some of that in this episode. However, he was somehow able to transcend the limits of his narrow vision with this episode. And he takes this character that I personally really love and connect with, despite all of the poor writing around him sometimes, and he made the best episode of his Star Trek career in this episode, I would argue. He gets a bad rap generally, and I think he deserves a lot of that bad rap, but this episode is dead center in his run, and I think the peak of his run of Star Trek episodes. And I would
Can I pause you here?
Yes.
So Brandon Braga wrote Cause and Effect and Parallels and All Good Things. I mean, are we really saying that this episode...
Did he write All Good Things by himself?
Well, no, he didn't. He did it with Ron D. Moore, right?
Right. So any episode that he writes with Ron D. Moore is great for some reason, because I'm going to go ahead and tell you, Ron D. Moore, right? And you can tell that by looking at what Braga did afterwards, Voyager, Enterprise, and what Ron D. Moore did afterwards, Deep Space Nine, Battlestar Galactica, right? You know who the talent was in that. You know who was taking those maybe high-minded ideals that Braga can come up with, like, vapidly, and making them with the follow-through be resonant and powerful. If we're talking about Braga alone, his name attached to an episode, this is the only episode I think of his where he is alone that really just floors me. Now, I haven't watched all of Enterprise, right? So I can't 100% say that it is his absolute... but I can definitely say...
In fairness, I don't think you're going to find much.
I can definitely say that in his TNG run alone, this is his best play.
Okay, so...
So four stars.
Four, okay. Then, Doc, how about you? Let you go next.
So, do I actually open every single one of my utterances with so?
It's like my wife, when she wants to watch an episode of Star Trek, I fill in the first parts. It's the one in which... Okay, go on. You ever do that? Yeah, it's the one in which... da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So I beat her to that punch, and she slaps me for it. You know. Okay, it's the one in which... All right, go on. It's the one in which...
I've mentioned this before, but the only time that I managed to get the wife to acknowledge that we should watch some Star Trek, she went... I said, oh, do you want to watch The Wrath of Khan? And then she asked, is that the one with the whales? I mean, I just complete mind blown.
We're done here. We are done here. Yes.
Yeah, The Wrath of Khan, the whale was called Khan. I mean, oh, dear, oh, dear. Anyway, look, actually, also, the thing about my wife, for decades, she's claimed that when she finds time, she'll sit down and she'll watch DS9 with me. And we're in quarantine at the moment, yet it's still too busy. There's still not enough time. I'm beginning to think that she's actually just putting off watching DS9 full stop. I might have to trade her in for a Trekkie model. I don't know.
Child support. You're going to have way too much child support. Go on.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, and that's the main thing. I've been kind of influenced in our discussion because I think Chris has convinced me that there's something a little bit more substantial than I kind of thought there would be. Now, actually, having said all of this, right, maybe that shouldn't matter. Maybe the way that this goes is that he gives it a 4, I give it a 3, and we split the difference. But, you know, I was kind of coming around to the idea that, yeah, it probably is a 4 episode. It is, you know, it is an enjoyable bit of Trek. It is very well performed. I'll certainly say that. It is engaging, certainly on the first watch. You do not have any kind of complaints as to where it's going. It keeps you hooked. It's an interesting tale that you can, like, you know, you follow through with. Now, I would argue that I still think that the ending falls a little flat, and as a result, it doesn't kind of get up there as to some of my favorite episodes that would be like this. And I'm kind of describing it. I've been I've been comparing it to things like Distant Voices, but Distant Voices is one of my favorite DS9 episodes, which is the one where Bashir's in a coma and he goes through a lot of these thoughts. And I would give that a 5 out of 5 without any question. So in a way, yeah, why wouldn't I give something that just falls short of that, kind of like a 4 out of 5? So I've come around. I've enjoyed our discussion. We'll give it 4 out of 5.
You were going to give it a 3?
I was going to give it a 3.
I'm not changing mine. You guys didn't but change I'm my soft. Mind. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Then for me, the episode is just pure hell. At least for Riker. Fun for me. It was so hard to figure out what was real and what wasn't. How did he go from the real play to the mission while still undergoing this torture? And like I said, I think I figured that out. The whole thing from start to finish was in his mind.
Well, no, they tell you at the end of the episode.
Yeah, they do. They obviously tell you that. Anyway, he accidentally woke up from the procedure before they could finish. Don't know what they were trying to get out of his mind, but he was able to stop them. A lot of my ending notes I put down before I kind of really synced the episode. So all this is mush because it asked what was real and what wasn't. It was hard for me to even understand at this point until you really put the whole thing in perspective. It got me going from start to finish. I didn't know what was where, who was what, who was real, who wasn't. Was that Lieutenant Suna an actual new officer on the ship that he just happened to grab for no reason? Did that person's race or species just become the catalyst for his downward spiral? And I love the fact that he was going to end this one way or another. He played a damn good psychopath. I don't know if psychopath is the right word, but still, he was losing his mind. He played it, I think he played it very well. Even the shaking of his legs and the chewing of his teeth, or chewing of his fingernails, that was a lot. He was playing it for all he had. And I think Jonathan Frakes not only carried the story, I think he's a master at his art. He knows exactly what he's doing. And someday I hope to see him in Star Trek Picard. Okay, so
he's teasing you there, Chris.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I like to see him there.
I know that he's in it because they show him in the trailer. So,
yes, they do show him in the trailer. I can't wait till you get to... which one was it, Doc? 7? I think it was 7. Get to 7. It's very, very... It's very, very cool. And,
it was 7 out of 5, wasn't it?
I think so. I think that might... And I'm not exactly sure, because if you listen... When you're done with these episodes, Chris, go back through our last few, because we're doing a kind of a quickie review of Picard. Don't listen to anything until you've done all 10 episodes. That way you get a feel for it. But
on my listen back through the Battle Bridge, I will tell you where I am. I'm on True Q, so that should give you a hint of how far behind I am on your podcast.
Okay. Well, yeah, get there. And you know, it's not like you should feel bad for it, because I haven't heard a lot of podcasts for years. I'm years behind on things because I didn't have a job where I could listen to podcasts anymore. And but anyway, so I like this episode, and I like this episode so much. I thought it was just one of the greatest ones that they've done. So I'm sorry, guys. 3, 4? No, I'm 5. I'm a low 5. I'm not a big 5. I'm still saying that I think it's better than a 4. It just had me going from start to finish every time.
Yeah, I think the weaknesses are there, though. And I think that if Ronald D. Moore had done enough to get a screen credit on this, it would be a 6-star episode, I'm sure. I don't hate Brandon Braga as a human being, by the way. If you're listening to this and you're like a Braga like lover, I find most of his stuff to be vapid. It's just it's popcorn. When I come to Star Trek, a lot of times I want steak or I want a cheeseburger, right? Like I want something substantial.
that I can really gnaw on and think about. And a lot of times Braga is popcorn. So.
Oh, wow.
Can you stay with the steak analogy rather than cheeseburger?
Well, I mean, I want something. I mean, Star Trek is sometimes not, like, it's not a steak, right? Like, sometimes Star Trek is not a steak, but it's still more substantial than popcorn. Sometimes it is just fast food. It is like, what's the one, the Die Hard on the space station? Like, that one is absolutely not a steak. It is a cheeseburger. All American, Picard going through and being awesome and knocking fools out and saving everybody, right? But it's not a, I wouldn't say that's a steak, you know. It's not like most of DS9. It's just kind of a cheeseburger. It's substantial, but, you know, not high class.
Cool enough. All right, then, Chris. Well, thank you for coming on. I don't have you anything to the end of the series.
What do you have me at the end of the series? Right. I don't even know what's coming up. You don't have me on at all?
Nothing.
You've completely cut me out of your entire life.
You didn't ask for anything.
Yeah, I feel like Rascals and this were like the last. Well, and A Fistful of Data's, which is the greatest episode ever created in all of Star Trek. I know everybody just was like, you know, I was taking this guy seriously, and now I don't know so much. Uh-huh. All right, so Next Generation, we just finished episode 21.
Yep, 21.
So. Let me pull up some CBS and see if I can.
The next one we have open is Suspicions, which is actually the next episode that we're going to record tomorrow. And then in season 7, I mean, I've got a lot of openings in season 7. So give it some time and think about what you want. Send me an email.
Yeah, I will dig through that and let you know, my friend.
Cool enough. All right, so everyone, join us next time as we review episode 22. And again, that is Suspicions. I get these suspicions. You know that song?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
Good thing the time goes.
Oh, yes, it is. It's a great song, too. I'm afraid somebody's gonna steal you away from me. Suspicions.
Even though I know that you love me, baby, and I really shouldn't feel this way. Suspicion, I can't help it, you're just so good looking. I'm afraid somebody's gonna steal you away from me.
Anyway, good night, everyone.
I'm waving the white flag on this one.
Yeah, okay. All right. Anyway, good night, guys. Good night, James.
Hey, good night, guys.